Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good, Bruce. Pretty good. I thought that was an entertaining game in a strange way. Super tight checking game. Very few grade A shots in the game. The Oilers missing, one superstar down. But I thought it was a good effort by the Edmonton Oilers, especially on defense. Bruce, the grade A shots in the game in this 3-1 victory of the Vancouver Canucks over the Oilers, 9-4 were the grade A shots in favor of the Oilers. And the five alarm shots were 3-2 for the Oilers. So not very many great scoring chances this game for either team. But the Canucks with only four grade A shots, I mean, that's an outstanding defensive effort by the Oilers. And they didn't score enough to win. They scored enough probably to have two goals this game, but which would have, had it tied and going into overtime. But that's hockey. That's how it goes sometimes. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
Any thoughts
on the game? I'm happy. Well, I'm not happy about the result of the game, but I am happy about one thing, clarity. The Oilers are now baked into second place in the Pacific, with the thinnest of hopes, two regulation losses by Vancouver and three wins by the Oilers. And I say, forget all about that and focus entirely on the last week and getting your team ready for the playoffs, resting your guys that need to be rested and tuning up the guys that need to be tuned up. You can take that more ways than one, but there's 3-0 games left. Unfortunately, there's three and not one like Nashville has, who finishes their season on Monday. Oilers play Monday. Oh, yeah, also Wednesday and Thursday on a brutal back-to-back road trip. Thanks, NHL.
But anyway, Bruce,
I'll get that off my chest now and we can move on.
No, that's okay. I was just going to agree with you, actually.
I hate it.
This is a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Finishing first would have been obviously nice to finish first. Yes. And if you play Vancouver in the playoffs, you have home ice advantage, which is something. It's not nothing, but it's not what it used to be. Teams win all the time on the road in the playoffs. It doesn't really seem to matter a whole heck of a lot. What matters is, are you healthy? Are you good to go? And now the Oilers can just, they can sit Leon. They can sit Ekholm or Bouchard. They can take it easy. They don't even have to, they just go through the motions in the next three games, throw the games for all anyone cares. Call up Jack Campbell and give him three starts.
Give him one.
Yeah.
I made a case for that last week. Get Stetcher and Broberg rotating through the D and giving all the D a game
definitely.
Off.
Definitely. Play both those guys, both games, and give everyone else a rest.
Give all three pairs a game off.
Yeah. And there's stuff just no like reason. That. No reason not to do this. They should do it, and I suspect they will. I don't know what this – and the salary cap shouldn't be a big issue because I don't know if they want
– They can call up three guys.
Oh, that's
there's no roster limit, so they can call up Campbell. They can call up Broberg. They can call up Lavoie or Gagne or Ernie or whoever.
Yeah. Well, go for it.
Whoever they want to get ready.
Go for it. Do it. And let's roll into the playoffs. It's fantastic. McDavid's obviously, I thought he was going to play tonight.
I did too.
And when he didn't, it's just either it's a sign of incredible maturity on the part of the Oilers to think, what the heck, who cares? Vegas is doing whatever they're doing. We've already talked about that. Let's bend the rule. Let's not push ourselves like with the old school hockey mentality of everybody's got to play every game. Even if they're banged up, it's like for Connor McDavid to sit the final 2 weeks of the season, that's a gift. If that happens, maybe he plays one game before, but Bruce,
he'll play two out of the three is my guess because he's already had a rest.
But possibly
he'll play Monday against San Jose and one of the two on the road.
Yeah.
Or maybe none of the two on the road. We'll see, but it's,
stay home.
Yeah. Anyway, it's, they're now at the point where it's like the exhibition season, these last three games before the playoffs. And
And the fact is, Bruce, we saw what the Oilers looked like this year without McDavid early in the year, or with a banged up McDavid.
Yep.
That was not good. So the fact that he gets this time now to heal up from a long season of bumps and bruises and one major bruise, I guess, lower body, I hear. I wonder if that's even true. He looks like he's skating pretty well from the video we're seeing. But anyway, I was cool with tonight's result. I'd like if they won, of course, but they played very, very well defensively. And that's really what I want to see from the Oilers. It's just a smart, solid defensive game. And that's what we got tonight. Bruce, this is our two good things, two bad things, two numbers podcast with one conundrum. What's your good thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Oilers penalty kill. Only two opportunities tonight, but they killed both with alacrity. And I love some of the work from some of the veterans. Adam Henrique ragging the puck in the offensive zone along the wall and wasting 10 seconds off the clock. Or Matthias Janmark in the defensive zone with an able assist from Connor Brown, freezing the puck against the boards for 10 or more seconds. Finally getting taken down, no call, but then sitting on the puck for another 10 seconds and just killing the whole last sort of 25 seconds of the Vancouver power play with the puck going absolutely nowhere but under him. And just smart veteran plays. And then in the third period, when Kane took the penalty with 8 minutes left and a Vancouver goal, you know, would have salted it away. And again, they got the job done. There was one close call around the net on that second one, but I thought the you know, they made strong plays and clearances with the puck and took care of business. So good on that.
Yeah, that bleeds into my good thing, Bruce, which is the Oilers' defensive play this whole game. And again, four grade A shots against. I think they're averaging like 11 or 12 a game against. So this is really, that was a really stellar defensive effort. There was a couple lapses, and we'll get to that in a moment. But overall, this is one of their best defensive games of the year. And I want to single out Vincent Desharnais and Brett Kulak in particular. I give them both eights.
Mm-hmm.
They were great. They were great where they needed to be. They both kept a clean sheet at even strength, which means not one major mistake on a grade A shot against at even strength. They weren't. They didn't leak any on the penalty kill either. So it's for the whole game. They both kept a clean sheet. And Desharnais's penalty killing was extraordinarily good. He blocked the last power play. He both blocked a key shot and he won a key board battle in that sequence. Mm-hmm. So that pairing is cooking. And I think Bruce, and more reliable right now than CC Nurse, when you're looking for shutdown defensive play. CC and Nurse are better at attacking, but if you just want to kill the clock, I wouldn't mind seeing Desharnais and Kulak out there right now, because they really are playing well together.
Yeah, they look good, and they you know, Edmonton had 21-9, 70% of the shot attempts when Kulak was on the ice. Like, that's a very significant margin, with, you know, lots happening in the O zone and not much at all in the D zone, which is both the way you want, and nothing to show for it on the scoreboard, but nothing to show for it against on the scoreboard, which is the first thing you want from your third period or third pairing, is to shut her down and not give up much or anything. And they certainly did that tonight.
They did. And so Kulak, Desharnais played 18:02, CC 17:13. So he was, He was ahead of Cody on the ice time. I thought Cody Ceci played very well as well. He led the team with 6 hits. He had one bad moment, which we'll talk about in a second. But he played pretty good hockey as well. Bruce, let's move on. Bad things. What's your bad thing?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the crummy goalie pull at the end of the game. It's 2-1. There's still 2 minutes to go. They haven't got their first line or first pairing on the ice. And the puck comes to Corey Perry low in the corner in the offensive zone. And while he's got the puck, unbeknownst to him, I'm pretty sure, they're pulling the goalie behind him. And it just was impatient, I thought, on behalf of, well, the coach. You know, it's 2 minutes left. Sure, you got possession in their end. And sure, you're getting down to the magic 2 minute mark, but I would rather have a better possession. I sure don't want to have a possession where I've got a, you know, a second or third line out there and a guy just, for whatever reason, winding up to take a slap shot from the corner when there was no time at any point in this game for anyone to get a slap shot because the coverage was just too tight. Sifting one on net was the play there. Not that I should be the one telling Corey Perry how to play offense, but on that particular play, that slap shot was a poor idea, and it went bad real fast because the puck got tipped at source because it took too long to get the thing away, and then it rang around the boards and Vancouver broke out and the puck was in the net and the game was over. And instead of having 2 minutes of opportunity, they had like 2 seconds of opportunity and blew it, and that was that. And I just thought it was very poorly executed right from source. I just jumped the gun and immediately paid for it.
Corey Perry was -3 that game.
I know he was in a 3-1 game. And that was the one goal where I thought he was, you know, at least in part responsible for it. And I'm pretty sure he had no idea what was going on behind him, or he might have played a control play, you know, pass it on the cycle to Kane or something. You know, remember he was all over Kane for...
That's right.
Impatient play around the net last week. Well, this time it was him. So,
just adding that into my game grades here. Turned over the puck on the empty net goal. Yeah, not good. Not good. Bruce, that line struggled tonight. Mm-hmm. McLeod, Holloway, and Perry, they were the one line out there that just was, they had a couple shifts where they got caved.
Yep.
And my bad thing is they were out for a goal against, or most of them were at least. It was the Canucks' first goal with 16 seconds left in the first period. The Oilers had had the first six grade A shots in the game, Bruce. And they came out really playing well. And then Vancouver in the last 5 minutes came on significantly. We're starting to cycle the puck. And the goal came out of like an, it was, there, I hate when goals come out of nothing plays.
Nothing
like,
play.
It's just a nothing neutral zone play. And just for a microsecond, and that's all it takes because hockey is a punishing game. Dylan Holloway falls asleep in the neutral zone. And McLeod also moved up on the play when he might have moved back on the play. But really was Holloway's wing, his side of the ice, his man coming down the side of the ice. And all he had to do was back check, fall back, be a step further back. And there's no goal on the play, but he's up the ice. He's up the ice 2 or 3 feet too far. And the Canucks break down the wing. Lafferty breaks down the wing. Nurse then is kind of, because it's a 3-on-2, Nurse is drawn to the middle of the ice somewhat. Mm-hmm. But his gap is enormous on this play. Too much. If he had just been up a bit, he probably would have got his stick on Lafferty's shot and stopped it. But he's hanging back, and Lafferty comes in and from the dot snaps a shot past Stuart Skinner. The third mistake on the play is Skinner, who looks like he's lost his net.
Yeah, I agree.
NHL goalies make that save. Mm-hmm. 90% of the time.
95% of the time.
Yeah. They make it like the shot from the dot is really good scorers will score, and sometimes weaker scorers will make a perfect shot. But this is not a grade A shot. This is a grade B shot. And Stuart Skinner has got to have that shot. And he didn't have it. He lost. He was over too far.
He was outside the blue paint with his left foot.
Yeah. You know, he just gave up the whole side of the net.
The whole right side of the net was available. And of course, Lafferty hit it. It was a nice shot, but I mean.
So three.
A fourth liner scoring from there is not good.
Three big mistakes there. And three kind of small mistakes adding up big time. Nurse had a rough last 4 minutes of that period. Otherwise, he had a pretty good game. I mean, he took the outside shot that Evander Kane tipped in. He had some good outside shots in the first period as well that were deflected on net. But there was a play that just before the goal against that was in some ways worse. Cody Ceci just out and out loses a battle behind the net, which isn't good, right? Like that's not good, but it's not fatal. Usually it's not fatal because you can usually count on your defense partner when you're battling behind the net to be in front of the net. And Nurse, like, so it was a little bit confusing because Sam Carrick had kind of moved back to one of the defensive spots, but he is the center. His job is to work with the defenseman to advance the puck. So he had moved to the corner because he's expecting CC to win the puck and then put the puck over to him. Sam Carrick's not at fault on the goal against. CC ends up losing the puck. And Darnell Nurse, he got it in his head, I think, that he was a winger on that play, and he was flying out of the zone. Rush. Flying out of the zone before they had full possession. Mm-hmm. And instead of playing it safe and doing his job, and how many times have we talked about this in the last year? Too many. And it was just really a frustrating moment. And I'm sure the internet exploded with the usual wrath. But,
well, it would have if the puck went in the net. I mean, it got a great save by your goalie will hide many sins. But Nurse, I mean, there was a big gap in the slot, and I was watching it for like 4 or 5 seconds, and it just seemed like forever. And at no point could I even see Nurse. He was completely out of the frame. Well, the Vancouver, was it Garland?
I think so.
Came into the slot and pounded.
Mikhaev.
Anyway, Skinner made a fantastic glove save on that one. Or it would have been, you know, Vancouver's first chance in the back of the net. And it was the gaping hole in the slot. Like, defenseman, like, it should be first and second nature to defenseman to be in that spot. When there's a contested puck behind their net, you cover the front of your net. Like, it's, we taught that in Pee Wee. And it just drives me nuts sometimes. Like, what's he thinking?
Hockey happens fast, but it that does. Was just, that was not, that was just one of those brain farts that Nurse has been guilty of. It seems like more than ever before in the last year. And anyway, he's a figure of going a great controversy, and he's going to be under a microscope in the playoffs. I hope he brings his A game. Like, I think he is making an effort. Like, I'm seeing
an effort
to keep it simple and safe. I think he's focused on that. But sometimes his reads are just off.
Yeah. Well, Holloway on that first goal.
Yeah.
After it went in, I said to my wife, I said, right there, that's like exhibit C or D of why Dylan Holloway won't be in the lineup at the start of the playoffs. A lot of people are going to be mad because I love Dylan Holloway, and they look at his game night and they say, well, he had 4 shots and 4 hits and he was buzzing around, and you know, but he just made a critical mistake on what should have been a nothing play, took a really bad route, and all of a sudden it's a 3-on-2 out of a neutral zone play, and that's third goal in a row the Oilers had given up on a 3-on-2, and he was involved in 2 of them where he took a bad route, you know, and coaches will be saying, we can't have that. We'd rather have Matthias Janmark and Connor Brown and Adam Henrique and their veteran savvy that can, you know, make defensive plays and go to the right places and not saying those guys don't make mistakes. I'm just saying the rookie ones just stand out a little bit on this team that doesn't have any rookies. And my suspicion is Much as I personally like Dylan Holloway, he's still a year away from being a, you know, real positive influence. His mistakes tend to be costly, and he doesn't score his way out of it.
They're going to need him, Bruce, next year. I mean, they can't keep all their forwards. They just can't. They're going to need cash to sign players, and Dylan Holloway is going to be needed in the top nine at that time. But I agree. Like, he's just...
He needs to learn, and I think he's learning, but there are frustrating moments. And, I mean, we're talking about Nurse needing to learn, and he's a nine-year veteran. So, I mean, but he's got stuff he's got to iron out of his game, Holloway, and some of it's just basic positioning and coverage.
Our Cult of Hockey colleague Kurt Levins made an interesting argument about Nurse, like kind of counter what we're saying. We're saying he's got to keep it simple, keep it safe. And, you know, he's just got to play his game, play it natural, just play with, like, go with the flow, play his game. And, you know, I think about a year ago, I would have agreed with that. I no longer do. But it was an interesting argument that he made. And there's certainly something to be said for trusting your players and building up their confidence and letting them play their game, whatever their game is. But their game can't be blowing the zone when your defensive partner has the puck behind the net. So,
yeah, well, he's very much an instinctual player. Like, one of the guys I liken his game to is Ed Jovanovski, who was a very good defenseman for Vancouver for a lot of years. But he was an instinctive player, and when he made mistakes, they tended to be glaring mistakes because he just sort of played the game by feel as opposed to really highly structured. And I sometimes or often get that same take on Darnell, you know, like he's going to win the race to the puck because he's faster than the guy he's covering, right? He's going to overpower him because he's bigger. He's got, you know, wonderful athletic abilities, and, you know, his game is less than the sum of its parts because, you know, he's got his risk reward meter is not ideal.
Stated very diplomatically, Bruce. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not going to go where some people go on that because it's not fair, for one thing. He just, you know, he plays an instinctual game, and we got to accept that and accept that's what he is. And a lot of the instinctive stuff that he does is good because he's so gifted.
Numbers. What is your number?
Yeah, I'm going to go with time on the penalty kill. Speaking of Darnell Nurse in particular, and this goes back to something you pointed out recently about and wrote about our distinguished former colleague Jonathan Willis talking about goal differential on the penalty kill. And suggesting that Matthias Ekholm, who had a much superior record to Darnell Nurse, should be Oilers number one on the penalty kill. And sure enough, tonight you look at, I mean, it's only 4 minutes in PK, but Ekholm 246, Nurse 103. And normally they're like 50-50, and even Nurse is more likely to be, Nurse and CeCe more likely to be the starters. Well, it was 246 for Ekholm and 239 for Desharnais, who's his partner on that unit. And for Nurse and CeCe, 59 seconds and 103. And I haven't had quite time to go in and look at it, but I bet you that we'll find that the Ekholm-Desharnais pairing started and finished both penalty kills, with the Nurse-CeCe duo getting the shift in the middle. And that's how you get it, you know, number one versus number two split on the penalty kill, is to do that, go with that ordering consistently. And sometimes one of the guys is tired, and so you're going to do it the other way around. But I think tonight that was just a coaching choice to get his top pairing, PK pairing, out there. at the beginning and the end of the penalties. And I can't think of one where sometimes the PK ice time is deceptive because you get a unit that can't ever get the puck out of their zone. They get stuck in their zone for 2 minutes and they get credited with 2 minutes of penalty killing. And it's because they weren't, you know,
successful. Able,
they weren't that successful, right? They didn't give in a goal necessarily, but they couldn't get the puck out and they couldn't make the change. Well, tonight that wasn't really a problem. The Oilers were good at clearing the puck on both PKs. But the just a subtle little clue, and it might mean nothing, but it's just something to keep an eye on. Is there going to be maybe a new paradigm in terms of how they split ice time on the penalty kill? And those would be the two guys to watch. The two keys would be Ekholm versus Nurse, but also Cece versus DeHarnay would be sort of the equivalent on the right side.
Yeah, what did what was Nurse's even strength time on ice?
Nurse played 18 minutes and 10 seconds in total, 16:31 at even, so 30 seconds less than Kulak at evens. Okay. Got played on both special teams, and Kulak played on neither, so overall he played a little bit more. This was a night that there was some stratification in terms of top, the ordering of the defensemen.
This gets to my number. Evan Bouchard played 25:40. None of that on the PK.
Right.
3:12 on the power play. But at even strength, he played 22:28. And Ekholm was at 17:42. CC 16:04, Nurse 16:31, Kulak ahead of Nurse at 16:59, and DeHarnay 15:23. So, Bruce, I just think it's indicative. This has happened. I know there's a bit of a debate, like it's a friendly debate about who is the Oilers' number one defenseman. Is it Ekholm or is it Bouchard? But you know, a year ago we would have all said Nurse, but things have really changed this year. And this pairing has been utterly outstanding. And Bouchard, he didn't have a particularly, he was okay this game. He had some mistakes. He had some good passes like he usually does. He's a bit of a high event player himself. Yep. I did like one moment, though, where he stood up for DeHarnay? Yeah, DeHarnay got knocked over early in the game. And Bouchard came over and gave JT Miller a pretty good hard shot. That was a great moment for Evan Bouchard. He had 5 hits this game, actually. He has really come into his own as an Edmonton defenseman. And I know he was a high draft pick, 10th overall, but the Oilers did develop this player. They slow cooked him, that's for sure. There was lots of angst about how long it was taking for him to get a regular job. And Tyson Barrie was brought in and played ahead of him. But, you know, hopefully the same thing will happen with Philip Broberg. We've had lots of angst about him and Kulak and Kulak's playing ahead of him and Nurse and Ekholm are. But I think things will change by next year, and we will see the same kind of evolution, slow evolution with Broberg, who scored 3 goals, I guess, in 3 games for Bakersfield, including one spectacular kind of end-to-end rush in the most recent game. But Evan Bouchard has, I would argue, established himself as the Oilers' number one defenseman. He gets the most ice time. He's trusted at even strength. He's, he's not a penalty killer. So you could say, well, Ekholm's more rounded because he plays all of them. So it's either him or Ekholm. But
yes, 100%. I'd make an argument for Ekholm as being the more complete defenseman, certainly.
Yeah.
And Bush gets more ice time in part because, you know, you can run up 4 or 5, 6 minutes on the power play if the refs are, you know, actually blowing the whistle once in a while. So the power play guy does tend to, because that's kind of rocking chair stuff. Like it's not not a lot of skating, and it's not a lot of puck battles. You know, it's just being in position and moving the puck around, which of course is Bouchard's big strength. And so he's they're without question now Edmonton's top pairing.
Oh yeah.
And you can say, well, which one's number one? Well, I kind of like him as a duo, and you know, it's semantics in terms of who you pick. But as a pairing, they're mostly good. I actually didn't think they had a great game tonight. And Bouchard, for instance, had below 50% right across the board on natural stat trick, including just 33% on high danger chances, and crucially 0-1 on goals. And on that goal against, he was beaten by
Tia
Suter,
yeah,
who was able to get a deflection on him because his stick wasn't at the ready. And Bush kind of had a poor shift leading up to that, which was part of the reason the puck was coming back at him the way that it was. So I thought just the last couple of games, he's been a little bit off his game, but that's natural. No, there's nobody that's on top of their game every game. And he's one of those guys that ebbs and flows a little bit. And, you know, they got a few of them. And tonight was not his A game, but he had his moments. And he did play more physically. He seemed to be sort of emotionally a little more engaged in the game, in terms of Vancouver pissed him off on the first shift. JT Miller did, and he extracted a little pound of flesh right away and wasn't backing off. And I quite like that, and I think we want to see that in the playoffs especially.
Bruce, our conundrum tonight is, so we've had a lot of Hockey Night in Canada zeroing in on the Oilers bench, and people talking on the Oilers bench. The most famous one is Kane Perry, which has been discussed to death. And before that was Draisaitl and Kane. That was, last Saturday. So tonight in the first period, they obviously had their camera zooming in on the Oilers bench, looking for whatever they could find. And and they did find, they found, after that play that I described with Nurse wandering high out of the zone, apparently in the timeout after that, Skinner had gone to the net, and you can see an animated discussion about Skinner between Skinner and Nurse. And there was, they were saying it was probably about that play, which is a fair guess. And Jennifer Botterill was also saying after the goal that, which both Botterill and Kevin Bieksa agreed was a mistake by Nurse. But she said, Botterill said that Stu Skinner shot Nurse a look, in her opinion. Mm-hmm. So I just want to.
I've seen one of those before a couple of weeks ago. I noticed one. I thought if that was Mike Smith, it'd be all over the internet. But because it was Stu, sort of going, "Where? What are you doing?" It's just one of those kind of looks.
I didn't see the look that he gave tonight. So, but I would just say this about: I don't mind them zeroing in on the bench. I did, like, this is all in public. Whatever. It's not a big deal. But I do think you're getting into dangerous territory when you're mind reading and lip reading.
And body language reading.
Body language reading. Yeah. Connor McDavid was upset to be drafted by Edmonton. Remember, it starts there. And there's a little bit of a narrative. It's like, are these people, Hockey Night in Canada, Toronto, are they looking to stir things up on the Oilers? That thought crossed my mind. Like, are they actually trying to advance this narrative that there's dissension on the Oilers? But forget that. That's probably just my Edmonton conspiracy theory. But I do think, as a journalist, and don't mind read. Don't, when Skinner, unless you're sure that Skinner shot Nurse a look, you don't know what he was thinking. Maybe he was just thinking, maybe it looked like he was looking at Nurse, but he was looking past Nurse. Maybe he was looking at the faceoff dot thinking, how the heck did someone score from the faceoff dot and beat me? Or how the heck did I let that guy beat me on an outside shot? Like, it's just, she does not know. And they didn't know what Bieksa last week didn't know, unless he got a text from Corey Perry, which is possible, I guess. He didn't know. He never made that clear if that happened. He didn't know what Kane and Perry were talking about on the bench. And they didn't know what Nurse and Skinner were talking about on the bench tonight. So it's, you can talk about the mistakes that happen on the ice. You could have talked about Nurse's mistake on that play without trying to stir it up or add
dissension in the ranks, David.
I just think it's not sound journalism, and they shouldn't engage in it. And for that reason, like, you could show there's an argument if they're fighting, that's okay. But other than, like, this whole guessing about what they're saying is a little, it's not sensible, and they should stop.
It's like historical fiction. You got a few sort of basic facts, and then you can fill in the blanks with whatever conversation you want to put in there.
Yes.
Anyway, it's I missed that whole thing on the Oilers because I was working on scoring chances in the first intermission. But I caught the one in the second period where they focused on the Vancouver bench, and it was during a TV timeout. And they said, you know, this is what we routinely watch while you guys are watching commercials. We can look at the bench, and we like to look on the bench and see what's going on there. And, you know, not a bad idea. I know some of the media guys have binoculars up in the press box. Rashog talks about putting his binoculars down and watching the bench, and he draws some conclusions from that. And no doubt some of them might be accurate, and I dare say some of them aren't. And so it's fairly speculative, and they're, you know, they're trying to... And the one they had on Vancouver was fairly innocuous, but they pointed about it was after a collision between two players, and they were discussing what happened, and there, you know, a little bit of this and that and a whole lot of nothing really. And I thought it's kind of interesting to see what goes on the bench during a TV timeout, and kind of not very interesting.
not that interesting. I didn't mind it last week with BX's speculation.
Well, that was an outright,
you know, they were
words. I mean, you could see right. That one. I mean, and that was too high profile. Yeah. Players with you know, pissy reputations going on.
It's going to be weekly, like, you know, let's do our mind reading section. Let's do our lip reading section brought to you by, get a sponsor for
body language again, you know.
Yeah. Let's bring in our body language expert and our lip reading expert to tell you what was going on. If it's a trend and 2 weeks in a row, that's once is okay, twice, come on, just drop it. Forget about it, unless there's something big that's happened. Bruce, let's leave it there. What do we got the next game?
Monday night at home against San Jose Sharks. Their only visit of the entire season, which will be home game number 41, because Oilers only play them three times this year. Them and Vegas are the two teams that they got one fewer game against. And then they're off to Arizona on Wednesday for the last ever NHL game there, or the last for the foreseeable future at least, which is going to be a bit of a tough game. I suspect Arizona will be pretty pumped. And then Colorado, who got pumped 7-0 by Winnipeg today at home.
Yeah.
In game 82 on Thursday night. So just a packed in schedule. So. The key is going to be get through that with players reasonably not overtired and stay healthy. That's the prayer for the next three games.
All right. Bruce, thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.